You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
Hey, Vank.
Hey! Who? Wait, that voice sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Who is that? Sam? Scene? Maybe Scene.
Scene sounds right.
Scene.
As in, yes. I seen you before.
I'm thinking groves of orange. Sean Orange. It's been so long. It's
oh, yeah.
Been so long.
I thought you were going to jump to herbs, but that works too.
Oh, man. You've ruined RPGs for me. Because any RPG I'm playing and house is totally quiet. I got my headphones on and it's like, you picked up an herb. I'm like, that's funny because reasons. Yeah.
Well, as long as you're not rage quitting.
That's true.
For those who haven't noticed, we're sort of in rerun mode right now on the podcast, but whenever we do that, fear not, it's because we're doing something else.
Something
fascinating.
You should be like, reruns? Wow, that means new content's coming out.
That's right. That's right. And
sometimes you'll be right.
Sometimes. Well, in this case, we're working really hard on our, drum roll, Kickstarter.
Ooh. Okay. The viewers at home are like, yeah, right. We've heard that before.
Well, I mean, I've got a couple of passes through our draft of the video.
Nice.
And we just need to add some touches to it. Well, touches. there are a couple of things we have to record yet for it, but it's there. The skeleton of it is there.
We need to update a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. There are some. We initially recorded it a couple of years ago, and some of the jokes are outdated. There was even a joke that was outdated when we recorded it, which I call out in the video. But I think we're going to keep that. Like, I was legitimately angry that joke was out of date when I read it. And then I did a take where I pretended I didn't realize that was coming and it wasn't as good. So I kept it anyway. But yeah, there's some things we have to fix. But we're getting ready to go. And it's not just that. Like, we spent a lot of time actually during the Winter Dojo, like, getting other logistical stuff out of the way.
Yep.
So we're gonna hopefully launch this about a month-ish from when you hear this.
Ooh.
I'm thinking.
Awesome.
I'm thinking. But we'll talk more about that after we talk about the reruns, because the ones we put up have actually had people engage in ways I was not expecting.
Yeah?
Yeah, we got a voicemail about it and about our first one, and we got an email. That was episode 13, Welcome to Die, which, I got to be honest, I didn't listen to before putting it up. So we got all these emails about codes because we asked people to give us their favorite game codes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was getting that and I was like, oh, yeah, that's what that episode was about. I mean, that is an old episode. Yeah.
From 2011. Yeah, it's from the first batch of the first year. So it's like, oof. But I'm beginning to realize how unhelpful some of our descriptions are. How did I even advertise it when I put it on Twitter and stuff? We were lamenting where the concept of lives in video games came from, and then more that they had been sort of disappearing from use in video games. Although there are good reasons why we've been sort of moving away from that idea. Oh yeah, what triggered that was the whole Ken and Roberta Williams thing.
Yes.
Yeah, because they are mentioned in our show notes. So go to the show notes at famicondojo.tv and read them and click on the links. Actually, let's see if the links still work first. Because they are 4 years old. Sierra Gamers. There we go. So we complained on that previous episode. That one. AdventureGamers.com forums are down. So what is Roberta Williams doing these days? So this is the kind of thing that article that we talked about in the last episode, the last new episode, complained about was...
Did we finally get the link for that up?
No. Yeah, someone asked for a link to the article we were mentioned about, and I still haven't gotten the show notes done.
Well, now when you're listening to this, getting ready to put this on, by the time you hear this, that's totally up. Otherwise, please call us out on it. So,
I mean, once you go to the show notes, you'll get it. Never mind. Reference to the soft porn adventure. But there was not a lot of content about Roberta Williams prior to 2014, I guess, was the complaint of the article. And here we have one link. Journeyman Project Trilogy, which reminds me of something we haven't done yet. Oh, I feel terrible. Any hoozle.
Focus on what we are doing.
We're okay, doing okay. Here. So let's listen to a voicemail we got from a listener who, I'm so glad we're getting stuff from this. All right.
Hey, this is Andrew, and I've got a couple codes for you that I've always enjoyed when I was playing these games when I was younger.
All right.
First one was from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game. The code I used there was B-A-B-A, up, down, B-A, left, right, B-A, start. That got you 10 lines and the stage left code. You only had a very limited amount of time to be able to put in codes on the title screen, so you had to be pretty quick. The other one I have, which goes along with possible Mega Man episode, wink, wink, from Mega Man 3, which was my favorite Mega Man game, if you put a red dot in A6, that gave you 10 lives to start off the game with.
Yeah, I know that one.
Thanks, guys, and enjoy the show.
All right.
Yeah, actually, mentioning Mega Man 3 there, one of my favorite, not really a code, it's more of a trick, is that there's like this pause thing you can do with the second player controller.
The pause? I mean, I know the one that if you hold one of the directions, you're pretty much, you can like jump really high and you are like impervious to pits.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It does this weird thing to the game.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like a debug mode that left in or what, but we use that to play that game and make ourselves just make it easier. But like it changes the way it plays when you do it, so it's not like it's kind of annoying actually, but it's interesting. It's interesting, and I've wanted to do a video about it for a long time.
We should. That's the only reason I was able to beat that. So.
I think Mega Man 3 was the first Mega Man game I ever did beat, and I don't think I've ever legitimately beaten 2 yet. Like, I've gotten to Wily, like, that stupid crash bomb, right? It's like, it's like if you miss one shot, you're toast, and there's, you know, start all the way over.
For me, my white whale is the original Mega Man.
Oh, that's even harder.
Because, most of them are not that easy. I mean, sorry, not that hard. Like, you know, Cutman, really, really easy stage, stuff like that. But then they throw the timing important Gutsman stage in, mm-hmm. where you have to time all those jumps just perfectly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I can occasionally make it through that stage. I mean, after, like, I always play that one first because it makes no sense for me to beat the other robot masters and then die instantly on that stage. So I always try to beat that one first. But of course, the problem is I've probably used up so many lives on that it's not enough to take me through the rest of the game. Capcom were maniacal with that one.
Yeah, like the original Mega Man game is the one I own it now, but it's the one that I've played the least and know the least about. So I'm sure there's still things about it that surprise me. Like when I first really saw it after having played like 2 and 3 and maybe even 4.
Yeah.
Like I was surprised there are only 6 bosses, and just really? How different some of the I think so, and just how different some of the sprites are. Like whatever I feel is like Mega Man 2 was my first Mega Man game, and it seems like it was really popular because they emulated a lot of what Mega Man 2 did for future games.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, an X. But also, like, I didn't realize that Gutsman I think it's Gutsman. It's like gets resurrected like every game as like a new powerful boss.
Does he?
Is that the one I'm thinking of? The guy with the big dude with the huge jaw?
Yeah.
Like the orange and red dude.
Yeah.
Like so he's like this enormous boss in Wily's castle stage in Mega Man 2, I believe. Yeah, like
shows that I've never gotten that far.
Or maybe I'm thinking of 3, but he shows up again and again in the original Mega Man series. Mm. Like he gets rebuilt. And so that's kind of a neat little Easter egg if you're looking for it. I didn't realize he was a boss in one of the robot bosses in the original.
One of my favorite bosses, gosh, I don't even remember which game, was the guy who like kind of deconstructs himself and reassembles himself on the other side. So you gotta dodge the pieces of his body.
Was so
that
smart.
Mega Man 3 or was that Mega Man 1?
That was 2. That was a Wily state. I think it's the second one you fight. Yeah. The first one's a dragon, then there's that guy, and then the third one's that stupid crash bomb things with the crap on the walls and the and the dumb and the barricades in the way. So you gotta use your stuff economically, and there's just no way to fill up your special power gauge again, and there's literally no way to beat it. If anyone knows, if I'm wrong about this and anyone out there is listening wants to correct me, things like that don't happen in modern games anymore. Although it's very interesting if you read the article about how not Way Forward, Yacht Club Games made Shovel Knight.
Yeah,
you know, they explain that one of the reasons why those boss battles don't have backgrounds and it's like this big kind of like just like atmospheric feel to these huge boss fights. It's because the boss is the background.
Yeah, pretty much.
So like that is absolutely true of Mega Man 2. Like, those giant, you know, they couldn't use character sprites. They had to use the backgrounds instead.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so smart.
It's very, very cool. And I'm wondering how Mighty No. 9 is going to turn out. I mean, I know it's not, but that's...
Speaking of Kickstarter?
did you back that one?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Because, I mean, for people who backed it, there was a free copy of Mighty Gunvolt just handed out recently in Steam codes.
Cool.
And that game's pretty fun. That game's is nice. I had it for the 3DS, too. It's a good game.
Awesome.
But that's coming up. And I'm wondering if it will keep the challenge or whether it'll be dumbed down for today's gamer, which I consider myself part of, because I don't think I could. I haven't beat the first Rockman. I haven't beat Rockman 4 or I think 3 is the only one I've actually played to completion. I know I've gotten to Wily stages on a lot of them, but have eventually given up. But like, I don't know if without cheating I would be able to do it at all at this point, just because those games require so much effort to be put in memorization and things like that to get through some of these things, the timing and things like that. And man, when I was young, you know, I had all the time in the world, and if a game was really hard, you just had to get good, you know. But yeah, so I'm wondering what they're gonna do with Mighty No. 9, which will determine whether I ever beat it or not. But I'm guessing it's gonna have things in so that people can beat it, you know.
It'll probably have save points. I think like Mega Man 9 has save points, you know. So.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason that those games have password codes probably has more to do with the lack of battery backup.
Yep.
Which was a conscious choice at the time. But, and then the Ninja Turtles thing, that sounded like one of those many variants of the Konami code that I used to have memorized back 30 years ago, but have since forgotten.
If I'm recalling correctly, the Konami code itself also works and does something in that game.
Yeah, I believe so.
But yeah, I mean, that's a game that I beat because of a code.
Oh, definitely.
Plain and simple. It's quite the Turtles arcade game would be very hard to beat otherwise, I think. You know, it also maybe if you were playing two players, because then you stay alive a little bit more, but single player with the number of lives they just default give you for that game, I think it'd be very hard. Not as hard as the first Ninja Turtles game, though.
Let's not talk about that.
Oh, interestingly enough, Turtles 2, the arcade game, is of course a port of Konami Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was not called Turtles 2 in the arcades.
Right.
So when it came out on Famicom, it was called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
And Turtles 2 for the Famicom is the Manhattan Project, which was Turtles 3 in America. But the actual game that they did, like, that, you know, the first Turtles game released, the one released by Ultra or whatever, that got a Japan release, but it wasn't called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
What?
I think it was still, I mean, I don't, I think it was still a Turtles game, but they gave it some very different name.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So I get a lot of requests for people wanting stuff from Japan, and they're looking for Turtles 2, and I have to tell that story every time. Because it's like, are you really looking for Turtles 2, Japanese Turtles 2, which is the Manhattan Project, or are you looking for Turtles 2, the arcade game, or...
Just Turtles 1.
Exactly.
So, oh, God.
What?
That's got to be frustrating.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were just having a flashback to the to the new Turtles movie. So.
Oh no, the new one. I like the new one.
What? What? How?
Did you see it?
Yes.
You didn't like it.
No.
Ah.
You liked it?
That
podcast over.
I didn't hate it. Rage quit this podcast.
I mean, did you like it for any reason other than the human cameos?
Yes.
Really? What was good about it?
I don't know. I mean, you know,
it was like watching my childhood be dissected in front of me.
Well, like you know how in the first Turtles movie, like Raph gets hurt and everyone's got to like save him, and they all just hole up and they don't do anything for half of the movie.
Yeah.
Well, in this movie, everyone but Raph gets captured. And he saves them all. It was a great.
Okay. But in this version of the movie.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. No. Sorry. Splinter.
Yeah.
What is his role here? So, okay, he was a regular. He was in this version. He's just a regular mouse that learned a rat that learned all these things from books.
Okay, is that really? Does that make any more sense than the animatronic rat from the first film that just learned from his cage watching? Like he wasn't a super smart rat yet. Like how did he learn karate as a normal rat in a cage in Japan?
Okay, but at least there was a connection to his master there, you know, and that he was learning some ancient technique from a ninja master rather than Ninja for Dummies sitting on the shelf book.
Yeah.
Plus by going by that timeline, he's pretty much the same age as the Turtles.
Right.
Which is weird.
Basically, no movie version of Splinter has been a human first like he was in the cartoon. I'm not sure what the comic version is.
I'm not sure either.
But all right. I'm okay with that. I'm also okay with the Turtles being Megan Fox's pets. I don't care about that. That connection is useless, but it's not a deal breaker. Will Arnett as Har?
I liked Will Arnett.
What's the name of that character?
He's
from the cartoon. It was a weird little connection.
It's been a while, but yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Will Arnett. I enjoy Megan Fox, not necessarily for her portrayal of April O'Neil, but didn't like it.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on.
Dislike. Okay.
Okay. The other code for video games. Man, whew. On topic here. Someone named Scrubheads and gives us no other identification.
All right.
You request a code for video games and have a funny code for Mega Man 2. If you hold A while selecting the boss, the background turns into birds. I don't think that's true. Is that true?
The background turns into birds.
I have a copy. I might even have like a Wii U virtual console copy or something. Okay. I should try this on. Should have tried it before the show, honestly. Anyway, good luck with the next podcast, which would be this one.
So. Oh, thanks.
I mean, technically, the next one was episode 20, which we haven't gotten any feedback on, but people retweeted or reblogged on Tumblr like crazy. So yeah, your run's going well so far. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. But we're also doing other things besides reruns. On Facebook, what do we do on Facebook?
On Facebook, we've got a new video up on Facebook. Now,
not on YouTube.
Not on YouTube. Well, this is the way we've done the Dojo Snacks from their inception, really. I mean, like, I guess in their inception, they were videos that I was like, is this good enough for YouTube? Let's put it up on Facebook. But some of them are actually quite good. They just, it's a different format from any video series we've done on our YouTube channel. So, so Dojo Snacks is usually it's something I found or something I just want to talk a little bit about that doesn't translate well to just talking about it on the podcast because there needs to be some kind of visual element to it. Very similar to the Famicom Dojo On The Go videos.
Yes. In fact, so similar.
Yeah. So similar. Sometimes I don't know whether it should be an On The Go or one of these. Now, if you haven't seen any of these, and I think a lot of people miss them because unless you come to the Famicom Dojo website every day, you know, it can scroll off the screen. You know, yeah, so what, you should probably go to the Famicom Dojo Facebook every day.
Right.
But
right.
If you don't,
or just go to the videos tab.
Just go to the videos tab and see if there's ones you missed. Yeah. In the videos tab, you're going to find these type of things mixed in with like ads for videos we've done.
Yep. We have our promos on there as well. So if you've missed our new videos, which some people have, we've gotten some emails from people lately who have found us again. And I was really excited. It's like, oh, maybe like our recent media blitzes have something to do with that. Or like the summer uplift, something like, you know, someone just saw a video recommended for them on YouTube. Nope. This one guy just said he had a Famicom hankering and remembered us from 8 years ago or whatever long it's been.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's cool, but I'm glad we made that impression. But where were you the last 7 years?
Listen, he's been busy.
We've been busy. Sometimes making videos. Sometimes.
I can't believe we've been doing this that long.
I know. I mean, something's got to change. Hence Kickstarter. But before we get to that,
okay, let's talk about the video.
Yeah.
This video came about while I was like, I pick up. If you've seen my game room, probably you see that it's just wall to wall like games, and a lot of times I pick up cartridges like dozens at a time. And they go into the shelf right away, but a lot of them I still need to clean and test and do all that stuff about. So probably about half of the games that I have right now I've never played, which I guess you could consider that an intensely ginormous pile of shame. But I'm not even ashamed about them because I don't even know what they are to be ashamed about it. So it's a pile of pre-shame.
Wow.
Anyway, one of these games was one I had been wanting to check out for a while, an RPG called Down the World, which is made by ASCII Corporation. And one of the reasons I'd heard people talk about how it was kind of like one of those hidden gems, you know, it never really got talked about very much, but it's really, really good. So I picked it up, and the first thing that I was surprised about was, of course, that it had the symbol on it for the turbo file. And I guess it didn't dawn on me that there was a turbo file for the Super Famicom. Because you'd think that by that, I mean, I think I'd seen it somewhere along the way, but like it never really registered in my head because it didn't seem like a useful peripheral for the Super Famicom because every RPG that needed it had battery backups by that point.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm,
know?
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm guessing it's so you can make multiple saves or transfer a save to somewhere else. Like, I still don't really see the point of it too much, you know?
Well, you know, I, I had the same feeling about like N64 memory saves.
Memory packs. Yeah. I guess I could see where you're going. But I mean, I knew the Game Boy had one, and of course we talked about the one for the Famicom. But anyway, it was my first time to see that logo on a cartridge, and I don't know how many cartridges actually support it. I'll have to look into that. But regardless, I need to buy one now because that's how I operate. Curiosity has peaked. Anyway, that was the first surprising thing. And then I turned it on, and I was really surprised to find that the theme song, the background music, was fully sung. And not just fully sung, but fully sung in English.
Right, and the compression didn't sound too terrible. I mean, it was definitely compressed.
You could tell it was coming from a sample that was, you know, scaled down to fit for the size. But I mean, but you could still make out what they were saying.
Yeah, it was definitely a sample, though. Yeah,
it was definitely a sample, and they did it in kind of a clever way. Like, all the background music was clearly made by just the chip on the thing. And then they put in sound samples. Because if they had the song is like 2.5 minutes long, maybe. Something like that. It's pretty, and maybe not that long. But, you know, it's pretty long. So if the whole thing was just a WAV file, it would there's no way that it would have. Because this is in the days before MP3 compression. Or at least before there was a way to put MP3 compression on a Super Famicom card.
Right.
So I was very impressed by that, just like I was when I heard the theme song for Tales of Phantasia on that cart, which is a very cool J-pop-y song. You know, I've actually always been really, really interested in audio on cart format. Like, how old was I? I must have been at least 10 or 11 years old. But I still convinced my parents to rent the game Big Bird's Hide and Speak. Like, wow. It's a Sesame Street cartridge, and I was way past Sesame Street at that point. And I didn't rent it because I was interested in Sesame Street. I rented it because I was interested in audio compression.
Okay.
Which is a hard thing to realize, but I just. This was so interesting for me that because I'd heard talking games on computers, but they had a lot more space to work with, you know, and often additional hardware. But this was on if you haven't heard it, Big Bird Titan Speak is still pretty impressive for how much spoken voice they put on the game. And actually, my daughter was playing it recently and it's because there was no reading involved, it was actually a good preschool game, whereas the other Sesame Street games, you really needed an adult to tell you what to do next, because there was no voice guiding what was going on, so it didn't make much sense to a kid, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, I was trying to think if any other games had things like that. And I remember that Matrimelee did. Matrimelee, which we've featured in one of our other episodes. Do you remember?
No.
It was in the Neo Geo episode.
Okay.
It's one of the examples we showed of a late released game. Because I think that was 2004, that game. Quite late.
Like, I just like used the clips you gave me because I am not a Neo Geo guy.
Okay. But what was interesting is if you play the game on a Japanese Neo Geo, the songs are fully voiced. But if you play it on an American Neo Geo, they're just like MIDI songs. At least that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard, actually. I don't know if I can totally confirm this. But anyway, there's some really cool ones like Subarashi Internet, which is just talk. I mean, they're all really funny songs too. And there's another song called Debu, which means fat. And there's a bunch of fat guys dancing in the background, and it's kind of like a heavy metal, like Debu, Debu. You know, it's a very, very cool game, and it's a quite large Neo Geo cart. And I guess the company that made this game, Noise Factory, actually found a way to do a pretty good compression. I don't know if it's MP3 exactly, but something like that. because the sound sounds great, but it's all running off a cart game. But, okay. And I was like, and I asked people in the video itself if anybody knew of any other games that did that. And we got a comment back, and it was just a really, oh, duh moment, because I owned that game. It was Clay Fighter. Like, and I mean, I remember being impressed by that as well. It's a really, it's a much shorter song. It goes, Clay Fighter, Clay Fighter, come on, fight them if you dare. Woo, Clay Fighter, Clay Fighter, hit him, smack him, they don't care. And that's basically it. Okay. A few oohs and ahs beyond that. And again, it uses the background music right from the cart. So it's sure. It's doing just a little bit of a clip on there. But yes, that is definitely one. And if anybody thinks of any others, I'd love to know, because it's still an interest for me.
All right. Yeah,
watch that video.
Yeah, watch that. It's fascinating. And watch the other ones if you haven't seen them, because they're also quite good.
Thank you. You just watched one of them for the first
time.
I know.
So what happens is usually when I find out like one exists is when I get like a notification on my phone that like someone's on the channel or on the Facebook page commenting about something. And, you know, then it's like, oh, there's a new video. Oh, I can't watch this right now, and then I don't go back and watch it sometimes. So happens.
I'm gonna take some of those. I think a lot of people missed them though, so I'm probably gonna do another YouTube Dojo Snack compilation pretty soon.
Ah, good transition, because on our YouTube channel, you may have noticed that there are some video reruns, sort of, I guess, going on there right now as well. Yep. For those who for some reason aren't subscribed to our original channel, Sean Orange, last year I put up a bunch of these weird little reviews, I guess. I don't even know what to call them, really. Like, I'll play a game I hadn't played
quick
really
looks.
Before. Yeah, yeah. Like, quick little previews. Like, I'm not reviewing the game because I haven't played it before. Or I haven't played much of it before. And
Sean reacts to...
Yeah, yeah, right? like those kids reacting to songs from the 80s they'd never heard of before. Yeah. I don't know. It's like that. Games from the 80s I've never played before.
There you
I did a bunch of these. The ones that are up right now are actually, I think the only one that's really up is the Time Lord one. And before that, I put up my NES Remix rant. And I liked that one because we've talked about it on this podcast before, but also there are links to some videos relating to that. My favorite one being the there's a challenge in The Legend of Zelda stack of things to do where you're just supposed to get a bunch of lives, and there's like a fairy you can catch like in like one screen up from where you start, basically.
Okay.
So that's how you beat that one fast as fast as you can. But I'm like, okay, I got like 3 minutes, I think, on the clock here. So
okay.
What's the most convoluted way I can possibly meet this criteria? And like, I was able to go into dungeon one and carefully not kill anything or not get any hearts to fill. Because I think you just need like 2 hearts or something to fill your container. It's something small like that. So I make it all the way through the first dungeon. Beat the dragon there without dying. Because you start with bombs, but you don't have any other weapons. Mm. And you can't... I don't know if you can't get the weapon in that dungeon or what the deal is, but like, you know, you're trying to do this as fast as possible.
Yeah.
So like, basically I place some bombs there, avoid the whatever the bullets it fires, and then pick up the heart container, which does nothing, and then pick up the Triforce piece, which fills your heart gauge. And I was able to do that finally and under the time allotted, and put that up as a video independently on YouTube also.
Okay.
But that's a video I enjoyed making, and I hope make some good points about NES Remix, which I still bought the second one. Don't get me wrong.
I had misgivings about it too, but I bought the compilation, the physical compilation when it was released, and I had fun playing Mario backwards as Luigi. So
yeah, someone told me that that the minus world trick does work in Super Luigi Brothers, but
really?
I wasn't able to get it to work because Luigi's Luigi's hitbox is differently shaped.
Yeah.
And like whenever I try to do it, he breaks the bricks. So I can't I can't get it to glitch out. But anyway,
I'd love to see it if someone could do it. Yeah.
I think there's video proof out there, but I need to see this one for myself because that can be edited. You know, just a little palette swap, flip everything over. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so we're doing that. We'll keep doing that as long as we have those to put up.
Yep.
Until we have new stuff, and we are also working on new stuff.
We are indeed.
So I don't know what we should say about the new stuff.
Not a lot, because I think
All right.
Let's just say that there are multiple things in progress right now. I mean, it's not going to be as much as our last onslaught,
maybe about half as big, if even.
Yeah, because we're also working on Kickstarter at the same time, and that's going to take a lot of our effort. So.
Should we talk about that now? Is it finally
time?
Yeah,
let's talk about it. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, all right. We're doing this Kickstarter. No. We're pretty excited. We've had this in planning for a while.
Years.
I mean, basically, this is our chance to finish the story of the 16-bit console wars that we started in 2010.
Good Lord! Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to call it that, our 16-bit wars project. That's what it will be called on Kickstarter. That's how you will find it. That's how we're going to build it. That's what we're going to put onto the disc, is anything 16-bit related that we have done or have been planning to do and haven't finished that we can fit in time or meet stretch goals. We want to finish the fight, as it were, because I think that Super Famicom.
I was hoping you'd use that line.
Right. I think that Super Famicom video is like the most teased video we've never released.
Yeah. It's like what was it? Is it the company? What is it? Bungie. Always teasing Pimps at Sea or something, or
what? I don't even know what this is referring to. I was thinking more like Duke Nukem Forever or something like that.
Ah, Duke Nukem Forever. That's a good one. Or Leisure Suit Larry 4.
That's good. So we asked people on Facebook what they want to see in a Season 2 set. So rather than just tell you what our plans are right now, because why spoil all the surprises?
Yes.
We're just going to see what you guys want. And then we'll, I don't know, confirm, deny, or say nothing.
Yep. And keep sending these in. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you've already missed this post, but we'd still love to hear. We want to know what people want in this thing. So
okay, all right. I got our list up here. All right.
Okay.
Adam Robinson asks for a backstory about all those Shawns.
Yeah, I want that too.
You want that too? Well, okay, so the source of this is season 1, episode 4.
Yep.
Where I bring another version of me. Actually, it's specifically called out as the episode 1 version of me, wearing the same shirt, but also with a beard, like episode 4 version. So that's kind of strange. But I you know, the time differential, right? Just like time crash in Doctor Who. Sure.
Yeah.
That's the excuse. No reason given for how that's even possible. But from that moment on,
we have come up with a very intricate backstory.
Oh man, there
we haven't really put it in the videos yet. Well, we've alluded at it.
Yes. There is an unreleased Powit video where I make the same joke basically. But you know, it's born out of the complaint that I'm the only one on my end of things doing everything. So it's like the me behind the camera, the me that does the editing. You know, they're all different versions of me. Is where that started, but like as an in-universe explanation, there's something else going on. I guess.
And it's kind of dark.
It's kind of dark. going to Powit again. A few of me have died. Let's just say.
Not even
just Powit. Like our 30th anniversary tribute to the Famicom.
Yep.
Has a version of me dying also.
Yep.
Referencing a Logan's Run video that I did.
And, And a Sean dies in the
the
3D special.
Yes, the 3D special. Two of them, the same one
for bus fare.
The same one twice.
It's pretty dark. Yeah.
So, I mean, if there's enough of me to go around, the show will live forever. Is what we're trying to say.
Yeah.
But yes, an explanation of that would be nice, and I figure it's probably best to call it the Clone Wars. Or the Clone Saga. Either one works, really. Depends on which thing you want to spoof. Although they're both owned by Disney now. So what are you going to do?
Don't spoil a Series 3 title.
Ah, Oh, dang it.
Anyway, yes.
Yes. That's a good one. Right, moving on. Moving on. There's a lot of these.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Tyler James Lucas. Three fantastic names that could all be the first name. Said... most cherished item video with explanation would be neat. That would be neat.
Yeah, because
we've
faked people out with that Rare Games thing.
Yep. We never really did. I mean, that was just the rarest thing in the collection, but like the most cherished, that could be a different video actually. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. That's not a bad idea.
Not saying we're going to do it or not, but that's a good idea.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Okay. Joseph Gott says, since season 2 was about Sega consoles, how about a favorite Sega peripheral or add-on? I mean, it wasn't just about Sega consoles. It just happens to be the first, four videos
something
that we
like
did
that.
For this
yeah,
season.
Something like that.
Yeah, we had the Sega Family Tree, which introduced the Master System, then the Sega Genesis and Mega Drive, and then, the power base converter, and then compatibility with other models of Genesis.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
favorite add-on. Gosh, I wouldn't even know. Wasn't there like a pad you put down on the floor that was like a rocking thing?
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
No, I think Those 32X and Sega CD games are probably the most useless games. My favorite has to be Scottie Pippen's Slam City. And my favorite, I'm putting that in quotes right now, air quotes. I've brought this to conventions before to like have people play it to show them how crazy it is. And I think it's worth talking about that. Not saying we'll do that either, but I think that's worth putting in. Give me the video at some point.
All right. Let's just go with Christopher B. Just says, very simply, talking consoles.
Well, I mean, that's a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
I mean, consoles can't talk.
Yeah. Stay in universe, Sean. Stay in universe.
All right. Nathan Sheeks writes, Vink versus Sean and Super Mario Brothers. High score. DuckTales NES fastest completion. I don't know if I can complete DuckTales.
I can. So I win that one. But Sean's got Mario Brothers down. I mean, because of all these videos we do, almost all of the footage of those comes from Sean. Actually, anything that's captured is from Sean. Although, I mean, I play Mario quite a bit and I can beat Mario, but I think Sean's got that one totally down. Speaking of which, we need to do a video on Fire Small Mario.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Which I can confirm works now. So.
Okay. That and the Beetle Tipping, which I can't get to work, but we confirmed exists. There is a video that if you go to the Some Orange Guy channel, there's a bunch of video gameplay clips I put up without any commentary except for like in the description that you guys should all just go and check out and see what's up there, because we were able to confirm that when it happened and I was able to finally get it to work. It's really, timing is of the essence here, not just to get it to start but to actually do the beetle tipping part of it, and I can't do that part, but I can get it started, so it's real.
Sean,
yeah,
is it just that the original Super Mario Brothers is an ingenious, amazing, I mean, it is obviously phenomenal game that has so many secrets in, you know, all the minus worlds. I mean, that's not an intentional glitch, but it's there, you know, just all of these things. Do you think that a lot of this would exist in any game if it was studied as extensively as Mario, or is Mario special?
Oh, Mario is special for sure, because someone found this, quote-unquote, found this glitch pretty recently. So, like, I don't... The way it works is you have to have play as Mario and Luigi, and then, like, wherever this vine in the Mario game ends up going to start this glitch is where it ends up in the Luigi side, I think, or vice versa. I don't think it really matters which way you go. But, like, someone probably just figured out the vine glitch. And like, it appeared in some useless area of the game. And then they, like, combined it with the idea. It's like, okay, if I specifically put it in this level, then I can do beetle tipping, which, you know.
I understand. But, I mean, because people, like, played Mario so much, they're finding these things. Like, if everyone was super, super into Mickey's Mousecapade.
Right.
But I don't know. Maybe not. Just because I don't know how Mario was structured, like, leaves it open to these. I don't know.
Well, anyway. like Mario is so brilliantly designed, because, you know, there were no tutorials back in the day, but, like, the entire first level is laid out to teach you how to play the game.
It teaches you how to play the game
amazing.
Without any. Hey, listen. Okay.
Yes. Anyway. Exactly. All right. Okay.
So maybe I, but, you know, in general, if we ever get, like, a Twitch channel up, we should try to, you can see how terrible we really are at video games head to head.
We can just play Splatoon like everyone else is doing right now.
Oh, man.
All right.
I have enjoyed playing Splatoon with you, Sean.
It is so, okay. Yeah. I own it now, everyone. I have it. I have been playing it. I've even played with Vink. So I will be talking about this in the future.
Okay.
But now, Kickstarter, yes.
Yes. All right. Okay. Kenton William Reese writes, bloopers and behind the scenes would be cool, but if you're going to do developer commentary, then the latter might be covered already. I like how you call it developer commentary rather than, like, director's commentary. Because I'd like to think that I'm a developer of dreams.
Nice. We did that for the season one stuff, so I imagine we have not done it yet. We were recording commentary for our season two episodes as well. And they're longer, so we can say more.
Yep. although nothing will ever beat the commentary from series one, where you came over to my house when I was visiting America with two, like, microphones from what you're like,
oh god, something. SingStar
from SingStar, and we recorded it, and in the background the entire time my dad's sitting there, because it's his living room, you know. He's sitting, I think he's trying to read the newspaper or something, but, like, there's all this game stuff going on and we're talking intensively about it. He's just like, what is my firstborn talking about? Yeah. So I think to get legitimacy, if we ever record our ones, we should do a group chat with Skype, so we can have my dad on there just reacting to what we say.
We already told the story, I think, in one of these entry mails about your poor dad trying to watch the Packer game as you recorded the Don't Blow It video.
You know, I mean, my dad is an integral part to Famicom Dojo, but never intentionally.
Except for how he looks like that one Pokemon.
He does. Oh, yeah, he was in that video. Oh, yes. He was also in one of the VinCon videos playing Bejeweled.
Oh, nice.
sorry, Dad.
Anyway. All right. Paul Spicknall writes, I remember a while back you talked about an epic showdown to go back to the 8-bit era before you had to change it. Could you give a lot more details about that?
Epic showdown. You talked about an epic showdown to go back to the
8-bit. I don't know if I know what this is referring to. I know that we kind of went back to 8-bit because of our Retro 3DS special, which was not intentional. Yeah. at least not initially.
I don't know. I mean, we teased lots of things. But it was probably one of those things to bring back that we were... Because originally we were trying to go chronologically, which turned out to be a pretty bad idea.
Yeah.
Because there's so much stuff we missed. So I think it's more in reference to that we were going back.
Oh, Oh, wait. No, I think we mentioned during the podcast we had originally ended. We had originally thought of how we're going to end season two, and we had to change that.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay.
That's what he was
yes,
talking about.
Yes.
And this ties into the next comment, actually.
Yes. It does, actually. Oh, my goodness. Now I'm sad. Okay. Yeah, you read it.
All right. Elijah Clark requests a tribute to Juwario or dedication for the episodes he was in. He will be missed. Yeah, definitely. So one idea we had, because every episode has a, I don't know what I want to call it, a advocate for the system, because we weren't necessarily fans of them ourselves. Although for two of those, they were you. As
they were me.
Characters.
Yes, they were me.
But we have Syndra, and you know, we had Justin as a caller. Just as a fan of the show. And we had some other people we asked to be in it, but did not end up doing it.
Yeah.
But we wanted those people to come in for commentary, and sadly we can't get that for Justin. So I was thinking maybe for that commentary track, we would just have us talking about him.
Yeah.
Instead.
I think that's what we're probably going to do. And, you know, we're definitely going to do something, some kind of dedication, not only was he awesome in the episodes he was in, and actually, I mean, some of the footage that didn't make the episode, because he recorded lots of footage.
Oh, I know.
Some of it is funnier than the actual stuff that got in. It's just it didn't fit the episode.
So someone even said they were looking for the outtakes from the Minus World video. He did, because he even mentioned like, you know, this is just like I'm not actually spraying myself with toilet water. It's just this squeeze bottle right here.
Yeah.
In character the whole time, of course. And he thought he had seen it somewhere, but I think we just described it so well on the podcast before.
I think it's possible, because I don't think that ever got out unless
I didn't put it up.
It was on one of his channels or something. But
I mean, Blip TV shut down, and like someone archived all of his non-YouTube stuff.
Yeah,
and that's up on a channel. We should probably link that.
Yeah,
that's up on YouTube now. So unless it's in there somewhere, I don't think it's released anywhere.
But getting back to Paul, your question about how the epic battle was going to go down.
Well, I don't know how much we should say.
Maybe not.
Let's just say that he was integral to what we were going to do.
Yes, yes.
And I have an unfinished email in my inbox to him about that.
Yeah. sad now. It would have been awesome. It would have been awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to do something different. I'm not sure what yet, but we're going
to
do that.
But it wouldn't be fair to do the same thing, because some things you can recast and some things you can't. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on.
Okay.
Brian.
Cagle.
Brian C. asks,
like a bagel? I don't know.
I would like a kegel with some schmear. Okay. Anyway, he asks Easter eggs and on the go segments. I mean, there are Easter eggs in the first discs.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find them all? Did you find them?
They're there.
I ask two people who probably have, actually.
Do you not have the season one disc? Actually, you know what? Oh, this is the part I hate about this.
Yeah. You want to try to sell the disc right now, don't you?
I do, but I'm telling you not to do it and to wait for the Kickstarter now.
Wait for the Kickstarter.
Now I'm telling you, because we're that close. If I had told people 2 years ago when we were first thinking about doing it, we wouldn't have sold any DVDs the last 2 years.
You better not be putting the Osborne effect into
No.
Don't Osborne my show.
No. But even, I mean, we're thinking of ways to handle this, but even people who had bought the DVD will get
something.
If and when the Kickstarter goes through. How about that? So you're not going to miss out totally. Even if you support us or don't, it'll make sense. I promise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the go segments, I think maybe, I mean,
we got to see how much space.
Yeah.
Because if we bring this up to, if we, I mean, if the Kickstarter makes a lot of money beyond, yeah, we can definitely do it. You know, we can throw a second disc in there, you know,
right.
But to make it the price that it would be, you know, that it would be feasible to do that, we'd have to go quite a bit above our goal.
Even so, just with the footage that we have shot, like, yeah. You know, most of the stuff that's going on this disc is done already.
Yeah.
There's just a few things we want to do to fill it. But just the stuff that we're planning on putting on it is like 3 hours of content right now. And depending,
significantly more than the first disc.
Yes.
Than the first season. Yeah.
Yes. I think that one had, the regular episodes were like about an hour, and then the special features like another hour.
Yeah. So it's basically like 2 hours of stuff. But this time, just the episodes themselves without the special features is like,
it's bigger. It's bigger. Everything's twice as long, and we have we're gonna have 5 episodes, I think. So.
I mean, we used to do 5-minute like regular episodes. Now a lot of the on the goes are 5 minutes.
Exactly.
And the regular episodes are going like syndication length. So
we're gonna try and keep it to the 16-bit theme where possible. Obviously, like the retro 3D special breaks that, but I'm okay with that. I mean, because it's part of the whole same thing. They all got produced together. Yeah. They belong together. And you know, one of the things we want to do is like get the Virtual Boy episode on there, but like the completion of that depends on a few factors. So I don't know if that we make that like a stretch goal to encourage those factors to fall into place.
Maybe,
but I would, I mean, you know, that's something I want on the disc. Let's just put it that way.
I would love that.
The other thing to worry about is space. So like, do we do full HD? In some cases, we kind of can't. Some of our content's going to have to be at 720p, and that's because it's mostly my fault, actually. I recorded a lot of that early stuff in 780i, either not understanding or realizing that I had a 780p option. So I've had the same camera this whole time, and I've since learned I do have a 1080p option.
Yes.
And I have been using it. So those can definitely be full 1080p. But the earlier stuff may have to stay in 720 because, you can see the shearing, at 1080p output. I've tried it, and it does not look good. So, okay.
Okay.
And then Nathan Cheeks again.
Also more Vink 8-bit nipple pics. All right.
To be fair, there were no Vink nipples.
There were no Vink nipple pics, so I don't know where this more is coming from, unless you know of something I don't. Because the only 8-bit nipple pics we put out were on the, what was it, about a month ago?
Yeah, the episode 125.
Where we were imitating the classic soft porn adventure.
Right, which had no nipples on it, actually. Although in my mind, there were for some reason. But no, this had to be sold on store shelves.
Yeah, so
there it was, yeah,
bubbles. If anything,
tasteful.
It was tasteful. So tasteful. Ours is far less tasteful.
Yes,
because there are definite Sean nipples going on.
Yes,
but
8-bit single pixel nipples.
Vink's nipples are hidden.
Yes,
behind two Famicom cartridges.
Unless we're saying that your nipples are Famicom cartridges, which would explain everything.
Then they're just really off, really lopsided. So I don't know if I like that. I don't know if I like that description.
Okay. All right.
But either way, stretch goal.
Stretch goal. Right.
Stretch goal.
Samuel Proctor wants an exclusive episode. I can promise several exclusive episodes because everything that we haven't released yet will appear first on the DVD, and I say first because everything that's going to go on the DVD will eventually be released. They're all timed exclusives.
Yep, and I mean, there'll be some time exclusive episodes, and there'll also be, of course, exclusive special features. Like, we're not planning to put our commentary up on the YouTube channel and stuff like that.
Right. So there will be that. There's actually one special feature on the season one DVD that has not yet seen the light of day.
Really? What's that?
It's our Conventions 2008 special.
You're right.
Yeah. We went to a bunch of conventions in 2008. DaishoCon, I think. Was that his first year? Oh, boy. I mean, GeekCon for sure. And that was like its second.
Yep, yep.
or third. But yeah, we were making the rounds before season two started.
Yep.
We had a bunch of alternate takes as well, and bloopers that were on that we also haven't released.
Yeah.
In fact, there are so many alternate takes from the TGS videos that I think we could have made a new special out of it.
Yeah.
But that reminds me of something else that we're going to do. So we have a lot of convention footage, not just from TGS 2011, but from other things we've gone to. And it is our plan to release those digitally as backer rewards. So everything we did not release yet gets released to you digitally. And if a very, very high stretch goal is to release a physical disc, because we mentioned it in the video and I haven't taken it out. But
by very, very high, we mean in relation to what we think
like
we can get.
Twice what we're asking for, because it would take to make that. If you scale up the rewards that we're offering to give out.
Yeah.
And you factor in the cost of printing another DVD.
Yep.
Then it's astronomically prohibitive, as it turns out.
Yeah, that would be like if you were backing a video game Kickstarter, and you also, and one of the stretch goals was another video game.
Right. It's not the cost of time to make it. It's the cost of printing one.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it also has to do with like the quality that we're going to be able to give out. Plus, because a lot of places that make DVDs for you, if you want it pressed, which is how most commercial DVDs are, versus burned, which is how any schmuck can pull off a shelf. Like those things have very short shelf lives, and we could just burn them ourselves, honestly.
Oh yeah.
But we'd rather give you a quality product, so we would press these, and the minimum runs for pressing that and still have it be economical are high. Yeah. So we would have to, we would have to have the interest, and we'd have to be able to still do our main pressing goal, which is for a Blu-ray. So we'll say more about that when you see the video.
I feel like we've already given away that.
Did we? Oh, man.
I don't know. If not, be surprised. But
I mean, I did just mention 720p and 1080p, so that probably let the cat out of the bag. But I mean, that could just been for the digital rewards, right? Okay. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, totally. Be surprised. Okay.
Yes. So in case anyone's worried, well, I just want a DVD. Well, we'll do one of those too. It'll be a bundle.
Yep.
Which is actually why it's going to cost so much, is because we need the Blu-ray and DVD in one package. And that's not horrible.
DVD doesn't add a ton of cost.
It's like 30% more.
Yeah. But like, but adding a second Blu-ray disc, that would be quite.
Yeah. So, but it also depends how many people are interested and so I'm excited. I know how many backers we need to succeed on average. I know that number. We did a lot of work for this ahead of time. So yeah, we just want to hit that number. And I think with people who watch on YouTube and listen to this podcast, we can get there. So I'm excited. Are you excited too?
I'm a little scared, but I'm very
excited.
Super
scared. What do we do if this fails?
Oh, probably stop making this.
I don't know. I think you're only half joking.
Okay, moving on.
All right. I think that's good. That's good. We've teased enough, I think. So next time you hear about this, it'll be happening.
Ooh.
I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems reasonable.
Seems reasonable.
All right. It's cool. So maybe more reruns after this. We'll see how much longer it takes us to get everything put together. But please consider supporting us. Tell your friends. Tell, I don't know, journalists whose stuff you read that this is happening, maybe. I'm just saying. I mean, we know people too that we're going to talk to.
Gaming forums.
I mean, you know, we had a lot of really awesome response to our season one DVD, and we didn't try to contact these people. And like, we got some really great reviews.
Wonderful reviews.
The Escapist wrote a review for instance.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So, I mean, I don't, you know, it's been a long time. I don't think that guy works at the Escapist anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah.
There are ways to make this successful. I think we're going to do it. So.
I think so, too. I think so, too. And that's because of all of you. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you ahead of time. So, all right. I guess until next time, because maybe not next week, but next time, the dojo is?
Constantly teasing our fans.
less Blu-ray and more blue. Good night, everybody.
Famicom Dojo.
The Famicom Dojo video game podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our music, Famicom Thrash and RPG, is performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter at Famicom Dojo, our free iTunes storefront, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. Visit our show notes, including links, video, and audio bonuses at famicomdojo.tv/podcast. Please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. And sponsor an episode or listen to any of the other great shows on the Little Podcast Network at littlepodcast.com.